Christianity is rooted in the Jewish tradition, but the 2,000-year relationship between them has been marked by conflict and even bloodshed. In his new book, Constantine's Sword, The Church and the Jews, James Carroll traces the development of Christianity. Carroll is a novelist, culture critic, and former Catholic priest. He tries to show how anti-Judaism, embedded in early church doctrine, was transformed into modern anti-Semitism. He argues that beginning with the conversion of the Roman Emperor Constantine in the 4th century, the cross became a tool of conquest rather than peace. To find out why, Carroll says it's important to go back to the original argument between Christians and Jews.
The earliest Christians were, of course, Jewish, and we need to understand that the conflict recorded in the New Testament, when, for example, we see the, quote, Christians or the church against, quote, the Jews, that first conflict was a conflict within the Jewish world. These were all Jews. Jesus was Jewish. His first followers were Jewish. It was when this conflict became polemical and increasingly fierce, especially after the destruction of the temple, meant that all Jews were, in a sense, having to find new ways to define their identity, that the conflict between the followers of Jesus and those Jews who rejected their claims for Jesus became fierce. What turned the story quite in a dangerous way was when many people who were not Jewish came into the community, read these accounts, for example, of the Passion narrative of Jesus, in which, quote, the Jews are blamed for putting Jesus to death, and did not understand that the Jews was not a separate group from the group of the first followers of Jesus. And non-Jews read that as a condemnation and a source of rejection and contempt for the Jewish people. It's really, actually, all a terrible mistake in how the first days and years of the Christian movement are remembered.
But you also suggest that the earliest followers of Jesus, who, as you say, were Jewish, may have wanted to point out or put some distance between themselves and other Jews who, by 70 AD, were the victims of Roman persecution.
Well, the Roman War is the great context within which all of this unfolds. Let me just back up and say, in the year 64 or so, the notorious Emperor Nero scapegoated the followers of Jesus for the fire in Rome, which they were actually not responsible for at all. So they had reasons to be afraid of Roman violence. But nevertheless, it's important to understand that through those decades, even into what we think of as the second century, the Jesus movement was one of a number of movements among Jews, all vying for a new understanding of what it meant to be the people Israel. The hard and fast distinction that we assume between the so-called church and the synagogue really didn't actually take place finally until perhaps as late as the 3rd, even into the 4th century. And the basic point is that the New Testament memory of Jesus as the enemy of a group called the Jews is not historical, and it's certainly not theologically acceptable.
But there are some basic theological differences between the followers of Jesus and those who chose not to.
Jesus is understood by his followers fairly soon as the Messiah, for example, so you're right. And most Jews, in fact, reject Christian claims for the Messiahship of Jesus. Because the argument for Jesus was put in language that was profoundly anti-Jewish, it was almost impossible for a faithful Jew, one of whom was Jesus, to accept claims made by Christians for Jesus. Jesus, for example, is talked about as the new temple. After the temple is destroyed, Christians began to believe that the destruction of the temple was a proof of Christian claims. And so when Christians began to, in effect, hold up the destruction of the temple as a good thing, Jews who were grief-struck by the destruction of the temple could only react negatively.
This takes an even more deadly turn, I suppose, at the rise of Constantine and with the establishment of the church as the official church of Europe.
Well, at that point, the Christian argument against the Jews becomes an entirely different phenomenon because now it's an argument that has the power of the empire behind it. Once the church and the empire become the same thing, the story takes actually a quite deadly turn, especially when Constantine uses Christian religion as a source of the unification of the empire. He goes to war behind the martial standard, which is the cross, literally turning the lances of his soldiers into crosses, which is the point of the title of this book, Constantine's Sword. And at that point, religion in the name of Jesus becomes a form of organizing, centralizing power in the empire, with very bad news for dissenting Christians, called heretics, for people who reject the claims of Christianity altogether, especially for Jews, which is why the 4th into the 5th century is so violent. Heresy ultimately becomes defined as a capital crime, which puts then eventually the question right at the heart of the church, what do we do about Jews if we're putting heretics to death for relatively minor disagreements over Christian theology? What do we do with the Jewish people who reject the entire Christian argument? And that becomes a really crucial question in the late 5th century, and it becomes point of argument between the two greatest theologians of the day, St. Ambrose of Milan and the great St. Augustine, who argues finally that the Christian church must absolutely allow Jews as Jews and Judaism as Judaism to survive within the Christian world. And because of Augustine's argument, in fact, Judaism does survive when numerous Christian heresies and numerous pagan sects do not survive that period.
Take us through, then, from this point, the key turning points in Jewish-Christian relations.
Well, picking up right there, one of the that's the positive part of the story of Augustine. One of the negative legacies, however, is that while he argued for the survival of Judaism, he also argued that the dispersal of Jews from the Holy Land and the degraded character of Jewish life were both forms of witness, signals that Jews are being punished for rejecting Jesus. In the period after Augustine, for several hundred years, the so-called Dark Ages, there isn't a centralized Christian power the way there was in the era of Constantine. And so the positive side of that ambivalence we see in Augustine more or less holds, and Jewish communities thrive, not only in the Levant and in the areas around what we think of as Baghdad and ultimately in Iberia, but even in the heart of Europe. But when a centralized Christendom reestablishes itself in the 10th and 11th century, once again, Jews become at risk.
Jim, at what point does anti-Judaism become anti-Semitism? Does this movement become institutionalized?
Well, we were talking about the Crusades and the Church's rejection of violence against Jews. That was a very humane moment, but what it led to was a massive effort beginning in the 12th and 13th centuries to resolve the tension between the church and the synagogue by bringing Jews into the church through conversion. The trouble is, of course, that coerced conversions can't be trusted. And what that led to was a broad Christian suspicion of Jews who became Christians and of their children and grandchildren. This lethal idea of blood purity was introduced here, the converso, so-called. The Inquisition was established to find out who the secret Jews were. Suddenly, the Jew is no longer the other in the Christian mind. The Jew is the enemy within. And once the Jew becomes the enemy within, then something really deadly began to happen. This is the beginning of modern racist anti-Semitism, where suddenly the difference between a Jew and a Christian is not baptism, it's blood. And it's out of this that the lethal anti-Semitism of the Nazis finally springs. Eventually, the church rejected blood purity and this notion, returning to a fully religious definition of Judaism. But the racial note was planted in the Western mind just at the wrong time, at the dawn of the modern age, and it bore a quite deadly fruit.
But Jim, as you say, the church doctrine has changed. Are there other signs of healing?
Well, your listeners will remember last spring when Pope John Paul II visited Jerusalem, and he made a pilgrimage, a religious pilgrimage, to the Western Wall, the last remnant of the temple. And he went to the Western Wall reverently and prayed there as a Jew might pray without invoking the name of Jesus. And he expressed sorrow for the sins of the Christian people against the Jewish people. That act, Frank, was a reversal of 2,000 years of Christian denigration of the temple. And it was an affirmation of the ongoing permanent holiness of Jewish religion. And I believe, by the way, that Jewish people understood the significance of that act far better than Christians did. That change is an example of a very fundamental, you might even say radical, shift in a basic notion of Christian belief.
James Carroll is author of Constantine's Sword, The Church and the Jews, and he spoke with us from member station WBUR in Boston. Jim, thanks very much.
Thank you, Frank. All the best to you.